We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who have devoted their lives to teaching and helping others through meditation. In today's episode, I had the opportunity to ask Elisha Goldstein the top five questions that our listeners have been asking. Elisha is a flagship instructor on Meditation Studio app, psychologist, best-selling author, and the co-founder of the Center for Mindful Living in LA. Here are a few of the questions that I asked him. How do you start and commit to a meditation practice? What does it take to train our minds to do new things? Or, in other words, how do we make big transformative changes in our lives? How do you find a teacher or mentor for our meditation practice? How can meditation help with world peace? Spoiler alert, he said, peace inside, peace outside. And I snuck in this last question because it's been a rough couple of weeks for many of us. How do you find your ground again when you're in a personal or world crisis? Before we begin, this podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio app, the app that was voted one of Time Magazine's top 50 apps of the year. I would love for you to give it a try if you haven't already. It's in the iTunes App Store. Now, on to the questions. Elisha, it's so great to have you back on our Untangle podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Love to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Live from Los Angeles. And today, what I wanted to do is focus on some of the top questions that we've had from our listeners since we began this podcast in January. And we're lucky to have Elisha here because he's one of the top mindfulness instructors in the country and has a thriving practice in LA and several books, as I know our listeners are aware of. But I thought this would be a great opportunity to really, you know, get this amazing expert to answer some of our questions. So I'm going to start with this question that seems to be the most common, and that is, why is it so hard to sustain a practice? People say to me all the time that it's really hard to commit to the things that are really, really good for us. And give us a little advice on that.
Well, you know, it's a really good question, and it's sort of a perennial question that has to do with all of the things like you're talking about, whether it's exercise or eating right or not being a rageaholic on the freeway or or meditation practice or any of this. And the thing is, like, years ago, we all kind of lived in clans, or in some cultures still do in some areas. And so we live in this kind of delusional space a bit, where we think we're separate from our environments. And we walk around thinking, like, if I just pull myself up by my bootstraps and really kind of, you know, dig deep, I'm going to, you know, be able to create this new habit, which some people might be able to. But the way it works is we're actually quite in relationship all the time with our environment. And our environment, the environment around us, for most of us, doesn't support, sticking to a certain habit for your own health and well-being. In fact, it's sort of, in some ways, the opposite. You know, most of the messages we get around us is, you know, what's wrong with us and what we need more of to be happy. And that's how that keeps our economy growing. And so we don't have a community of people around us for the most part, because they're also in this trance of, like, needing more and more, you know, to be happy. And so we need a community, like in the olden days, of people that are saying, like, I'm doing this thing, which cues us to do that thing as well. And that's really hard right now.
When you say, you know, what we need more of to be happy, well, don't we need more meditation and yoga and community to be happy? So why aren't those things included in the messages that we're getting?
Well, those aren't necessarily big money makers. You need this clothing to be happy. You need this perfume to be happy. You need this new face to be happy. You need this, you know, this, the things that you pay for, you know, in some ways.
The messages that we're having.
Oh, all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
The billboards around us, what people are talking about, everything, you know, leads back to, you know, the bottom line of spending money, you know, on things in order to be happy. But, you know, really what we need is, we need community, we need connection, we need cues around us in our environment that lend us kind of implicitly and automatically towards these new types of behaviors that we want for ourselves. And people are the best cues we can possibly get. So in other words, I always say to people, if you're standing in the middle of a circle and everyone around you cares about you and understands you and is supporting you to doing the things that you want to do in this world, like, how does that make you feel? And a lot of people say, oh, I feel safe, I feel accepted, I feel, you know, I feel more, you know, motivated to do these types of things. So, you know, that's our biggest crux in our culture right now. To me, it's our biggest growth area, is recreating an opportunity to allow more accessibility to mentorship for people to do the things they want to do, like more accessible mentorship, more friends and community around you that are doing similar things that you're doing. So automatically cue you to be accountable for these new changes you want to do in your world. And I think that would make a gigantic difference, unparalleled.
Right. It sounds so interesting. But I feel like a lot of people think they do have communities around them. They have their families, they have their friends, but I think what you're saying is you're not always getting the cues that you need to really grow.
I'm saying if you want to create a meditation practice, let's say, you know, mindfulness, let's say, is a huge thing in our culture right now. You know, all this new science that's come out over the past 15 years saying it, you know, changes your brain for the better, and it, you know, leads to reducing your blood pressure and variety of different ways of feeling healthy, a reduction of relapse prevention for depression, anxiety, stress, these different things. But without continuity of practice, so it doesn't have to be some major long 30-minute a day practice or something, just some continuity of practice, those changes aren't going to happen. And we might have family around us, or we might have friends around us, but those family and friends aren't necessarily into this type of stuff. And they might just be people we've had in our lives forever who are supportive to us. But if we want to say, well, I really want to take this meditation thing to the next level and create a regular practice, that's not necessarily something that your family and friends are going to cue you to do. If you want the optimal opportunity, then I would suggest taking the Alcoholics Anonymous model, you know, in some way, and saying, like, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Like, the wisdom to know the difference is, I can create this practice of exercise or of meditation or these different things in my life. But I also have to understand that habitually in my life, I have this habit of starting something and stopping something or not continuing with it regularly. And that's just kind of part of my constitution, I can change that, but it's going to be a whole lot more supportive if I have people around me that I know that are doing the same thing, and I'm connecting with those people, and that will help.
Really narrowing it down, it's you really should have like-minded people around you to support the changes that you choose to make in your life, and that will make it so much easier.
And the mentorship. Yeah.
And the
like-minded
mentorship.
People. Yeah, I think mentorship is important because you can have like-minded people can be enough. And that would be a huge coup just to have that alone. And then if you have someone to ask questions to that's been around the block before, they'll be able to provide you with some insight that may kind of arouse you to kind of go to that next level, move past that obstacle that's inevitable. One of the teachers or people that I really love her work is this woman, Carol Dweck, out of Stanford. And one of the things that I love about it is she said some people have a fixed mindset and some people have something called a growth mindset. And a fixed mindset is something that says, like, I have certain abilities and that's about it. And every time I fail at a certain task, it's just a reinforcement of what I can't really do. And that's associated with people who have high anxiety and depression. And I mean, more like kind of recurrent depression. And this isn't a mindset that just kind of sticks with you always, but it can come in and out. And then there's the growth mindset, which says this, and this is really important because this speaks to exactly what we're talking about around making changes, which is that obstacles in life are inevitable. We're always going to have something that's going to run up against us and say, like, okay, you can't do this right now. This is too hard, or something like that. And the learning mindset, or what she calls the growth mindset, says obstacles are things to kind of continue to try and learn from and engage from and create insight from. And then you can begin again from this place of understanding, you know, what this obstacle was and how to move around it, you know, more the next time, or continue to experiment with it. And you continue to grow and grow and grow that way. And I think these types of things that we're talking about around having people around us, these like-minded people, as you said, and then also mentors who have been around the block before or maybe been trained in this particular thing that you want to change, is going to be incredibly impactful towards actually making the changes we want to make and sustaining a practice in whatever you want to do, whether it's engineering or whether it's exercise or whether it's meditation or any of that type of stuff. Those two things, that like-minded people and that mentorship, is something that our culture needs to really learn to get better and better at.
Yeah, those are really super great insights. And I've heard that before about the fixed versus growth mindset, and it's had such a huge impact on me personally. And even, you know, observing other people with a fixed mindset, you get this very rigid feeling. And it's just such an important observation. I am going to ask you the next question that we seem to get quite a bit from our listeners, which is, what does it take to train our minds to do new things? You know, how can we really make big transformative changes?
If I was to say the simplest thing to do that can be a shift in mindset that's quicker than taking a selfie, maybe, is adopting a really curious mindset towards things. Novelty, by the way, trying new things is associated with positive brain change. And it's also associated with various aspects of well-being. And so in order to even open up our mind to try new things, which I think is the first part of your question, we have to adopt a beginner's mind. And you've heard this term before, maybe many listeners have as well. But Dogen Zenji said, the beginner's mind, the possibilities are endless. And in the expert's mind, the possibilities are few. So we want to kind of adopt a curious mindset towards things. We might say, I know this is how this is going to go. Oh, meditation, that's not for me. Or exercise in this way, that's not for me. And we might want to say, okay, well, let me kind of try this again from this point in my life and be curious about, when I do engage this stuff, what do I notice in my experience? And so I think that's one part about it, of how we kind of train our minds. We first have to kind of break open our mind to be open to trying new things, and that's adopting a beginner's mind. But in order to make really big transformative changes, we need that, and we need a bit of grit, I would say.
What do you mean by that? I was thinking you were going to say practice. So you need the curiosity, and then you need to practice. So you need to repeat something over and over again. But what do you mean by grit?
So that's implicit. We need the continuity of practice. Grit means a little bit touching on what we were talking about before, which is that, you know, there's going to be obstacles along our path, whether it's our own minds that are our obstacles telling us we can't do something or something's too hard, or whether it's something actually physical that happens that gets in our way. Like many of us try and create an exercise practice and then we get sick and then we kind of fall off for quite some time after that. And so grit says that, you know, I understand that some things are going to be hard, and I also know that I'm in this for the long haul, and that I'm going to move through these difficulties. And there's different ways to move through them. There's a way that a lot of people do, which is they grit their teeth to get through it, which is not the kind of grit I'm talking about. And there's a way of kind of bringing a bit more self-compassion into the process, seeing the whole journey of kind of like how there's going to be ups and downs to it. And when there's downs and fear is there, or discomfort is there, or difficulty is there, I can name that. That's that moment of mindfulness. When I name it, I get a little bit of space from it. I can also recognize that, wow, this is a really difficult moment. I anticipated that there's going to be difficult moments, and everyone has difficult moments when they're trying to make big changes in their lives. It's just a part of being human. There's a common humanity to it. And what do I need right now in order to support myself in moving through this? So, you know, that type of self-compassion practice, you know, built into having grit and continuity of practice is to me a recipe for setting yourself up for success, for making big transformative changes. And so the question is, how do I deal with these downs? And then kind of dig deep a little bit to say, okay, I'm going to move through this difficult moment, because on the other end of it is this is how I'm going to grow. And so that's the grit, is saying like, okay, I'm going to choose to move through this right now. And of course, if it's overwhelming, then kind of back off. But with the understanding that I'm going to come back and get with the support that I need in order to do that. But those things are, you know, self-compassion, grit, and mindfulness can help you follow through on your intentions.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
I want to talk a little bit about the program that you're launching that's coming up very soon, because it has so many of these pieces as a part of it. And so my next question was going to be, what does it take to find a really good teacher or mentor? And so maybe just telling us a little bit about that will help to, you know, sort of shed some light on the finding your teacher.
What I've noticed in the past, like 15, 20 years, with this real rise in science around mindfulness and all these programs coming out, 6 to 8 week programs coming out, and me having taught these programs for the past 10 years or more, have found that just every single time people come out having felt like they got something out of this program, and they say, okay, so now what? Or, you know, where do I go now? And the science shows that then their practice falls away, because the community is gone, the mentorship is gone. And what I thought would be really fantastic was to give people a longer period of time to actually integrate this work. Like, so for example, in traditional mindfulness-based programs that are out there, there's not really the time and space to learn some of the fundamentals that really help you sustain your practice, which is learning how to be kind of like more relaxed, learning how to train your nervous system to untangle from the freneticness that's been conditioned from the culture that we live in right now. When we kind of have a more relaxed nervous system, our brain is more receptive to learning. And then to how to create stability of mind. I mean, to be able to have a more relaxed mind and kind of train more of a stability of attention will help us in anything that we're doing. Again, whether it's surfing or learning about mountain biking or exercise or meditation or anything. So these kind of things we really begin to train. But the biggest part is creating a worldwide faculty of people that are accessible, trained teachers that are certified to be mentors to people all over the world.
Wait, so how does that work? So let's say I sign up for the course, which I would love to do, actually. Is it 6 months long?
6 months course.
Six months. Yep. And so there's a community of people that will be involved both online and in person, or just online?
Well, right now it's just online. It's live online. So basically what happens is we'll kick off with an event with me, a live event with me that'll be live online, a live event with me talking about the program, introducing, and every single month you'll have that event with me. Mm-hmm. Then 2 weeks later, you're going to pop into these private mentorship groups that are going to have trained mindfulness teachers leading them. And they're going to be smaller groups, more intimate groups. So people get the attention that they need to like ask, you know, okay, so I'm going through this program. I'm learning how to like relax and retune my nervous system, let's say in the beginning. And I'm running across these obstacles. And then other people in the group say, yeah, me too. And so they get feedback and support from somebody who is a trained mindfulness teacher in smaller groups. Then within that month-long frame, there's also this opportunity to opt into these really like strategically designed accountability pods. And these are all segregated by location. So my hope is that people over time not only create a connection with their mentor, their teacher, who's within their region, but also create a connection with other people locally. So they create potentially even friendships and relationships that start to kind of introduce them to other people who are like-minded, like you and I were talking about, and have similar interests that they do in sustaining this particular type of practice in their life, whether it's formally or informally. And ultimately, that's what's going to create that change. So the content in this course is really fantastic. It's tried and true and backed up by science and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, what's almost like, you know, most important is this way it's being designed to create accessibility to mentorship and relationships with community over time. And that's really the key.
That's such a big wow. And it's missing from so many other programs. So I love that you're integrating all of these different pieces into one program. I really feel personally and deeply from having listened to so many of our listeners that this is a big piece that's missing. You know, how do I carry my practice forward? How do I find the right teacher? How do I find other people who are interested in the same things that I'm interested in? And so I really love that you're integrating all of that into one program. So I'll be excited to see how that goes. And maybe we'll talk to you along the way when you begin that program. So let me ask you another question, which is, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, creating stability in difficult times. But people, you know, it's one thing to learn it, but when you're in that moment of grief or a work crisis, or you've just broken up in a relationship, just as examples, you know, how do you, in that moment, find your ground, your stability?
For, as you said, it's one thing to learn it.
Right.
There's only a couple things we can really do in life. And the main thing is really kind of preparing. And so the learning aspect, preparing for those, you know, in some ways, those difficult moments. So that's a really quite an important piece. And so then when we're having a difficult moment, we're more likely to access those memories of stability that we've been practicing. So whether, as an example, whether that's kind of settling into your body with, let's say, a mountain meditation like we have on the meditation studio and practicing that regularly. So you really have a sense in your body of this stability. And during a difficult moment, that's if you're practicing something like that regularly, you're more likely to access it even during that time of grief and come into your body. The body is the first place that I always tell people to go to as far as creating kind of stability, because what you're doing is you're sensing in your body, and there's plenty of science that backs this up. You're creating a neural shift in your brain that's moving from the mind that's kind of thinking and self-referencing all the time to the part that's kind of accessing your body and your emotions. And so you're turning the volume down in your thinking and coming to be with what's here. And so even in the first part of A Course in Mindful Living, one of the very first practices that we learn is noticing when your body is bracing, because then your mind is really thinking and moving around, and learning how to be aware of that and softening that again and again and again. So your brain gets more used to that, and it becomes more of implicit memory, which means it happens automatically.
So the last question I'm going to ask you is, how can meditation help us in the world with world peace? So how do we truly come to understand and accept our differences and sort of radically accept them?
Okay, so there's a few things I would say about this. I'll talk about when Rick Hansen and I were giving a talk together recently, and he and I were giving a talk at UCLA, and we were talking about that. Like, what's it going to take to move the needle with world peace and get people to kind of come together more? And I'll just say this without trying to get too grandiose. I think that, Thich Nhat Hanh, one of my favorite teachers, said peace in oneself, peace in the world. And so obviously it starts with us. Right. And so what I know is that when we do create more sense of kind of ease and peace and grounding within ourselves individually, there's a reality around emotional contagion, which means that what the emotions that we cultivate within ourselves, the sense that we cultivate in ourselves, seems to have ripple effects across people up to at least the science shows up to 3 degrees. This is science by Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler that have found that obesity is contagious up to 3 degrees, loneliness and happiness. All those three things are contagious up to 3 degrees. And so we know this in our own lives, because when we're feeling really angry or people around us are feeling that way, you feel it in your body and you start to hold that energy. And so it starts with us doing this. And so that's why I'm trying to create this kind of worldwide network of mentorship and communities, you know, surrounding, support each other within these types of practices so that they can really integrate this in a more enduring way. And that then has ripple effects across the people and the communities around them.
I love what you said about peace in oneself and peace in the world. Is there anything else that you would like to share about the course in mindful living?
This course is the most important work of my life right now, by far, hands down. It's really doing something that I think this world, at least the cultures that I know are, that I'm more connected to, are really missing. It's filling a major gap and has the opportunity to be incredibly transformative to the offerings that are out there and the accessibility and the ability to help people sustain their practice so they do create really big transformative changes. And I can't be more excited and motivated to put this out in this world and let it grow.
As always, I'm just so grateful for the wisdom that you put out into the world and for all the insights that you share with us. And maybe you'll come back to the show once the program starts and share with people what, you know, how it's going and how you're integrating all of the different pieces of the program.
Yeah, if people are interested in it, they can go to the acourseinmindfulliving.com. And it launches January 10th is when it starts.
Good. Well, we'll have information at the end of the show as well. And thank you again so much for being on the show and for answering all these really important questions for us.
Thank you for doing this.
Thanks so much to Elisha, and thank you all for listening. Be sure to check out Elisha's course in mindful living at elishagoldstein.com. You'll learn how to build confidence, calm, and a life that you love with mentors and a community to support you. Once again, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio App in the App Store. See you next time.